and welcome to WrestleSpective. I am Jason, and returning to the program is our good friend Kay Sawyer Paul. Welcome, Sawyer.
Hello. How are you, man?
I'm hanging in there, you know, just trying to get through this pandemic situation with my sanity. But, you know, luckily a good support system at home. Luckily, you know, my life is impacted minimally outside of just staying home. Everyone's pretty safe and healthy, so can't complain too much.
Excellent. Me too. Me too. All good. And, you know, doing podcasts with you, doing podcasts with other people has been a really, really fantastic outlet during this time. So thank you for doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. So we are going to talk about a very interesting match, one I had never seen before from a promotion I had barely ever seen before or knew nothing about. So going in not with much knowledge, but it is from Lucha Underground Season 3, Episode 13 from November 30th, 2016. It is Pentagon Dark versus the Black Lotus Triad.
Oh my God, yes.
Yes. Really fun and entertaining match, which, you know, we'll hit the highlights of. I not really familiar with any of the characters here. So, first tell me a little bit about why you chose this one.
I think we were talking about things that like, we find kind of delightful. And you mentioned to me during the last time we talked, you hadn't really watched wrestling in about 4 years. You'd gotten busy and the crackle of one's fandom had diminished a bit for you. And, you know, I think this is one of the most natural things that happens to a wrestling fan is that every now and then you just kind of burn out. And I feel like almost anybody who listens to this at some point in time in their life, they'll go, you know what, I gotta take a break from this. I gotta take a few years off. And I think about, what brings people back? What makes you go, you know what, I'm going to check this out again. I'm just going to maybe I can put an inch of wrestling back in my life. And I had a period of time in 2014, 2015, around there, where I was pretty sick of wrestling. I think it was just after WrestleMania 30. I'd kind of decided that I need a break from this. And, you know, about a year later, I heard about this new show called Lucha Underground, and it aired most of its first season by then, I believe. I think it started airing in 2014, but of course I'm in Canada, so I, you know, I get things late. And I checked it out, and you know, the first few episodes of the show don't seem too different from your typical kind of small indie promotion that happens to have some cameras, but man, it didn't take them long to find their own flavor, their own sense of things, their own lore. And it's the kind of show that after 4 or 5 episodes, you're like, I am fully in this. This is a soap I am now following.
Right. Yes. And it does, you know, from the limited experience I have with it, from some of the, you know, vignettes they have, it does have a very soap type, you know, flavor for sure. It's very, the acting, the, music, the way that it's shot, not so much in the ring, but you know, the vignettes definitely have a soap opera flavor, you know, for better or worse. But you know, I think, you know, wrestling is, there is a soap opera attic aspect to it. You know, I think some people definitely resist that comparison, but I think it's apt, and they definitely embrace it here.
Yeah, so there's, you know, there's wrestling promotions that say, oh, we're going to be a little bit more sporty. We're going to treat this more like a sport. Right. Then there's wrestling promotions who are like, well, we're going to really crank up the acrobatics. And you start to realize that, like, you know, the production of a wrestling show is a series of decisions that you crank up and down, or a series of cranks that you crank up and down. You know, more athleticism, less athleticism, more theatricality, less theatricality. Lucha Underground, you're right, for better or worse, is a show that decided we are going to go full soap, full supernatural, full lucha. Like, there's so much great Mexican wrestling on this show, which is a style, you know.
Right.
This is a style you normally get maybe a match in a show out of in WWE every now and then, but this is a show full of that stuff. you know.
Yes.
And it's a show that also sometimes cranks down the athleticism and very much cranks down the sport of it. So like one wrestler in this match, we'll get to her at the end, isn't really a wrestler, isn't really doesn't really do a whole lot of actual wrestling, but is very much a soapy character.
Sure. Yes. So I guess I'm going to sort of describe what I understand of the buildup to this based mm-hmm. on the video package and what I read. And then you can kind of fill in the blanks or correct me sure. if there's anything that I get off. But so basically, yeah, you're referring to Black Lotus. Black yes. Lotus is she's it seems as though she's again, mostly a manager, mostly a mouthpiece. She's sort of the one of the lead villains. She's been involved in several of the key storylines, but largely, again, as a manager.
I would say less a manager than just a character, someone that just drives the plot.
Okay.
And yeah, hero villain is Lucha Underground is one of those companies that where hero and villain are very blurry.
Right.
Yeah.
So she had a at the end of a match that she has with another wrestler. He comes out to get El Dragon Azteca. So they have a match. Pentagon Dark. And he commonly has a move in which he basically breaks the wrestler's arm. So he does that to Black Lotus. Black Lotus is upset about this and then introduces the Black Lotus Triad, three Japanese women wrestlers who come out and attack him and basically lay him out.
Mm-hmm.
And then now this is set up for him to have a gauntlet match with the Black Lotus Triad, actually all four members of Black Lotus and her triad. So
that's right.
There's also a little bit of a LinkedIn with Vampiro, who's one of the color commentators here. Vampiro used to be Pentagon Dark's master, and they had a violent breakup where Pentagon Dark left Vampiro bloody. And Vampiro sort of gives a not exactly a pep talk, but not exactly like a but not a pep talk either. Beforehand about basically, you know, the evil that he is about to face. And Pentagon Dark, very evil himself, but at this point is definitely seems like a fan favorite.
Yeah, Pentagon in Lucha Underground is very much a villain for most of the run. But the fans absolutely love him, you know, so it becomes murky, right?
Right.
And he's, you know, in this plot, he's in the wrong. He very much stuck his nose where it didn't belong and got involved in things. And this is a reap what you sow, classic wrestling payback match.
Sure. So talking a little bit about the atmosphere of Lucha Underground, I mean, very cool. They have like a band playing during certain segments. I don't know if it's a regular thing or if that mm-hmm. is kind of standing out here, but that's pretty cool. Obviously, you know, the arena's cool. They use a lot of the arena during this series of matches, and you know, we'll dig into, you know, kind of the cool stuff that they do there. But it's very dark. It's very small. They definitely have a really excited fan base. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit of a fancier, like ECW arena type thing. I mean, not as raw as that, but they're clearly going for that kind of vibe.
Yeah, updated for high definition television, I would say.
Sure.
Yeah. This is what the ECW arena would look like with a little bit more money.
Right. It's kind of like basically like the WCW Saturday Night set meets like ECW. It's like halfway between that. It's like halfway between the glossy production and the attempt at like the raw, you know, dark type of energy. I feel like it's somewhere kind of like in the mix between that thing. So
to me, it's one of the great sets, you know, like I adore, and I'm sure you do as well, adore a single wrestling location.
Yeah, no, that's obviously cool. And that there's a lot of advantages to being able to use that in your show and to have that single location be something that you go to different areas of it, you learn about the different areas, they bring in different elements. I mean, that's always very cool. So I like to talk a little bit about the Black Lotus Triad themselves before we mm-hmm. get into the match. And I'd like to talk about specifically the decision to have them be, uniform in terms of they basically dress the same. They look very much the same in some ways. You know, your first introduction to them, and this is they other than I believe the attack on Pentagon Dark, this is basically our introduction to them. There is a very much a uniformity between that group, and I don't know. There's some, I think, advantages in doing that, especially when you introduce somebody, but you also have the risk of not being able to tell them apart, which for the first time or a couple times you see them isn't a big deal.
Yeah. And well, what's funny about this is their only match in Lucha Underground.
Okay.
There's the surprise attack a few episodes before this, and then there's this, and then this story is essentially concluded. This is the climax moment of a story that's been going about 15 episodes or so.
Okay.
Between Pentagon and Black Lotus and El Dragon Azteca. So this is very much the climatic moment, and these three women are they're kind of just goons in a way, and I think that's why they're dressed all the same. They're okay. Basically just heavies for Black Lotus to throw at Pentagon, and this is part of Lucha Underground's efficient booking style, I would say, is that like if this was a WWE story, it would have gone 3 months. And sure. They all would have fought each other in one-on-ones and tags, and it would have culminated, and you would have been really sick of it by the end of it. This is like this whole feud is like three matches.
Right. Okay.
So they dedicate a whole episode, a whole hour to just this match. I find it very interesting, and I don't know that they really explained this going forward, that this is a gauntlet match of Pentagon Dark versus these four women. But if any of the four women defeat Pentagon, the match is not over. The next woman comes in to continue to fight Pentagon. So sure. It is very much a four-on-one match. He's just taking them on one at a time.
Right, right. So we start off with Pentagon Dark against Doku. And Doku is also known as, forgive me if I pronounce these incorrectly, but Kairi Sane.
Kairi Sane. That's Kairi right.
Sane. Okay. And yeah. She is in WWE at the moment. And
she NXT. Is in WWE. Yeah. Okay. She opened up WrestleMania 36 in a tag team match. She was in NXT for a while, and then she sort of graduated up to the main roster. So she tags with Asuka.
Yes.
Yeah. And she's great. She's so good.
Yes.
She was known as Kairi Hojo at the time before WWE sort of rebranded her. Okay. But yeah, great. Known sort of famously for an amazing elbow drop.
Ah, yes, which she does showcase here. So I'm making the assumption that when you first saw this, you were not aware of the Black Lotus Triad. Like, none of the three individual women meant much to you, or were they known
This was completely brand new to me. So Kairi Hojo, Mayu Iwatani, and Io Shirai. Io Shirai also working for WWE right now, all in NXT. So she sort of came about a year after Kairi Sane did to WWE. And all fairly famous Japanese women's wrestlers, but this was my introduction to them. Yeah.
Right, right.
This match actually made me start paying attention to Stardom, which is a Japanese women's promotion.
Right. Which I will be checking out now because I'm interested in these three women in particular and would like to check out their promotion. So I did a little bit of reading on that today, mostly Wikipedia-ish reading. But yes, so we start off, we get a Lucha Libre chant, which, fun fact, I once tried to get a Lucha Libre chant started during the Eddie Guerrero versus Super Crazy match at the first Ring of Honor show. It did not work out very well for me.
Aw.
Yeah. So,
well, good try.
Yeah. You know, it was my one and only time to ever try to do a chant, and then I decided that chanting just wasn't for me. So
you're on the side of the angels.
I hope so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, so we get an immediate series of strikes from Doku and then a vicious low blow to Pentagon Dark, and I think that in this dynamic where one, you know, Pentagon Dark's obviously larger than Doku, it's always good for the smaller person to do something sinister to, you know, first of all, establish them as the villain in this situation, or they're more villainous in this situation, and also to prevent it from seeming like a bigger person beating up a smaller person.
Yeah, this is a great lesson in how do you book a match where the good guy is twice the size and easily twice as strong as the bad guy.
Yes.
There are moments in this match where I go, I don't know if I believe this entirely.
sure. Yeah, that.
But the level of supernatural nonsense that goes into Lucha Underground, weight differences between male and female wrestlers really becomes a very low point of contention.
Sure. And I kind of had the same sort of initial kind of like this is cool, but also not entirely working for me in terms of that. But I got over that really quickly after, mm-hmm. The first few minutes of it. So we get a really vicious drop kick from a Pentagon, I think, right in Doku's face. And then Doku does a running forearm into the corner, but then tries it again and then runs into a really vicious super kick from Pentagon. And Pentagon kicks Doku several times viciously in the thigh. And the amount of pain that it seems like on Doku's face on there is very well done.
Nothing like two wrestlers wearing leather pants to make things sound extremely painful.
Right. Yes, that's very nice. And then we get the first instance. And I'm sure, given the reaction to it, this is a signature thing from Pentagon. But he shushes the crowd and then does a slap to the chest of Doku, and the crowd goes wild, of course, for that, and that will continue throughout the series of matches.
I've seen Pentagon live a few times, and Christ, he's one of the greatest live performers, because he involves the crowd so many times in his match. He does so many little back and forth things with the crowd. It's a delight to see him.
Mm-hmm. So Pentagon Drag, I don't know much about him. He was there from Lucha Underground pretty much from the start. He seems like he's the star throughout most if not all the run.
Pretty much, he starts as kind of a mid-carder character in season one, and sort of by halfway through season two, he's a main event guy. He main events for the championship at the climax of season two, and throughout season three and four, he's I would say one of the main characters. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha. Okay.
And he's currently in All Elite Wrestling with his brother Ray Phoenix.
Ah, nice. Okay. Very cool. So, mm-hmm. Then they go to the floor. He tosses her into various obstacles in the outside, various walls and barricades and such. Then he lifts her up into a gorilla press and then drops her right onto the apron. And Doku very much selling the extreme pain here. We get a "This is awesome" chant during the time. Crowd all very much into this the entire time. They're very enthusiastic throughout. Doku tries a spear, but then ends up getting caught by Pentagon. But then later we get a series of counters and she lands the second one. Then she does her very famous jumping top rope elbow, which looks really, really cool.
So good.
Yeah.
And you never get sick of it for years.
No. Right. It's very nifty. Then she does it again and the second one gets caught in, and then, what does Pentagon call that move, or what is it?
Well, this is just an arm breaker, I think. Like, okay. But it's very much like, I forget what they call it in the thing. But yeah, no, her arm canonically in this story is completely shattered at this point.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. He locks in sort of, it's sort of like a semi armbar-ish type submission, and then he exaggeratedly pulls on it and as if it has been broken. So I would say he took, like 75-ish% of the match. I mean, Doku certainly presents herself as a threat, but is definitely a strong, win for Pentagon in, the first leg of this gauntlet match.
I would say so too. I want to point out here that the camera, so the match ends as soon as she breaks, as soon as her arm is broken.
Right.
So that's essentially a submission, I guess, but it's also kind of a knockout in a way.
Right,
And it cuts to the color commentary where you see Vampiro kind of standing and staring menacingly. Now, Vampiro is also a character on this show. He's kind of a driver of the plot. He was Pentagon's manager for the first two seasons. Well, I guess season two mostly. That's a big twist in season one that he's the manager. Spoilers, I guess. I'm sorry. But he sort of plays a somewhat innocent And this is important, sort of like cleaned up version of the old Vampiro. This is a man who's gone through a lot of sort of like addictive cleansing, just like he's made himself better. He's what's the word I'm looking for?
he's gone through rehab, basically.
He's rehabilitated. I don't know why I couldn't think of that. This is a rehabilitated Vampiro. And yet in this match, especially, you see that he's maybe not all the way rehabilitated. He isn't completely better, in a sense, right? Go ahead.
I was just going to say that they make a big deal at the beginning about Vampiro has nothing to say initially about the situation. Like, he's very quiet. It's all Matt Stryker who's, you know, talking initially. And then Vampiro verbally is getting more into the match and into the violence of the match. As it gets, you know, as it progresses more, he's talking more. He's getting, you know, he's talking about how excited some of this is making him. The implication of sexual excitement for Vampiro. So
let me introduce you to the fact that Lucha Underground is kind of a horny show.
Okay. Yes. Yeah.
This, like, if you're used to sort of wrestling relationships in other shows, WWE, WCW, it's you kind of get the sense that everyone's an awkward virgin and they're all 13 years old mentally, you know. Lucha Underground is not that. This is a show full of adults who fuck. And people react accordingly to this. There are a lot of relationship, because it's soapy. There's a lot of relationship stuff on Lucha Underground, and there's a lot of sexual stuff. And, you know, the fact that these guys are all wearing black leather, the fact that they're all hitting each other really hard, that's a sexual component of the show.
Yeah, and it is text, not subtext, I guess.
It is not subtext.
Right. And, you know, nobody really wanted a horny Mike Tenay, so I'm glad that we didn't really have that, but... in the past, but
oh my god, in another world, maybe.
Maybe. So after the match is over, after the ref stops it because she cannot defend herself, so Pentagon Dark has the mic. He speaks in Spanish, but there's a translation. He says that it doesn't matter how many there are, I will break all their arms, and then threatens to break Black Lotus in half. So
what an amazing smart solution to your wrestlers not speaking English is just give them a subtitle track.
Very nice, yes.
Yeah, right? The answer is right there, WWE. Just give them a subtitle track.
Right. That is, a very good solution. So now we get Yuri. And I like the... do you know who the ring announcer is on Lucha Underground? I don't know her name.
Incredible and lovely Melissa Santos.
Ah, very nice. So
yeah, I don't know if you can tell that I'm a fan.
She's great. Yeah, and they do. I like that they do intros for each one. You know, they have a pen already in the ring, Pentagon Dark, and then they bring out the next one, and that gives it. I mean, they're short ring intros. They're nothing super fancy, but I like a good presentation of a ring introduction, and they just do a nice job. They don't just bring another one out there. They actually introduce them. They give them some. It gives them another measure of esteem, I guess. You know,
yeah, this is all little bit of pomp and circumstance. You don't need a ton of it, but a little bit goes a long way.
Yes. So, Matt Stryker, I think overall he does a pretty good job of commentary here, but there are a few Matt Strykerisms where he just sort of awkwardly describes stuff, and one phrase that is maybe slightly awkward is Asian ghost lore. To describe Yuri's name.
At least he didn't say Oriental ghost lore.
That would have been a lot worse, yes. So, Asian ghost lore. But Vampiro also refers to black magic here and there, which I'm guessing is more like a theme throughout the type of show. I'm assuming sort of the supernatural elements that you're talking about.
Every now and then. So Vampiro is low-key one of my favorite color commentators because of Lucha Underground. Because, every now and then, you know, Matt Stryker tries to make things make a little bit of sense. Right. You know, he goes out of his way to try to explain stuff. Like, you know, they're not talking realistically. It's a metaphor. Like Brian Cage, for instance, his character is that he's not a man, he's a machine. That's his character. Sure. And you know, at one point Matt Stark is like, oh, it's just a metaphor. He's not really made of steel or stuff. And then Vampiro just like offhandedly says, I don't know, man. I think that guy's mostly robot.
Nice.
And it's like, and he does that kind of stuff here where like Vampiro's just offhandedly talking about black magic, talking about vampire stuff, talking about cults. And he's just like this. It sounds like he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah.
And it's, and he knows what he's talking about because we know that he knows what he's talking about.
we know he's a weird dude. So we've gotten that impression.
Matt Stryker has like 1 foot in reality and Vampiro does not.
Right. Right. they seem like a good team. You know, like I mostly enjoy the announcing, and Matt Stryker is not an announcer I've generally enjoyed for the most part. So, but he does a fine job here. So we begin with Yure and Pentagon, some dueling arm drags, which Yure, seems to win, then, goes off of the top of the ring post onto the floor with a beautiful diving splash. Mm-hmm. And then she slams him into the barricade, then follows up with a series of kicks and strikes. She's very smiley during this match. Very much smiling, very much playing to the crowd, almost in a good guy way, but also almost in like, I'm enjoying this violence type of way.
This is the classic wrestling payback, right?
Right, yes. I mean, she's also, you know, and on one hand, it sort of seems against character, but on the other hand, it's sort of playing into the, you know, the point of view of the character, and also playing, and the crowd is receiving her well. The crowd, you know, is cheering for Pentagon, but is also into the triad. So it's kind of they're just kind of into the violence, I think, overall.
Mm-hmm.
And I would assume they would at least somewhat see the point of view of the triad as well. So, So the Vampiro crediting the black magic for her strength despite the size difference. Yure hits him with the ring bell. Not the best shot with the ring bell. One slight flaw in the match, but you know works well enough. And then throws him at the stairs. Pentagon finally comes back with a series of kicks after, you know, a few minutes of being at disadvantages, but she comes back with a slaps and kicks. During one of these smiling episodes, Matt Stryker has the comment of a pretty face and a smile is a thin disguise. And I wonder where he might have read that off of. It feels like fortune cookie wisdom to me, but.
Yeah, could be.
Yes. Yes.
I love the steps. I love the steps that the fans are sitting on, and also like that's how they come down to the ring from one of the three entrance points in the arena. Uh-huh. But man, they look painful.
Oh yes, absolutely. And then we get back in the ring. Yure does a few running kicks, but Dark catches her by the leg and does what sort of a leg DDT, and then locks in a leg submission hold. And apparently the word tap doesn't exist in the dark side, according to Vampiro. However, we do learn that the words rope break do exist because she eventually reaches for the ropes to break it. And then they bring up an interesting point of Dark, you know, Pentagon Dark focusing on the leg here, and sort of the idea that kind of goes against his normal strategy of focusing on the arm and whether they're luring him into something. But also Vampiro bringing the idea of, well, you know, this is kind of, that this might actually work to Pentagon's advantage here. So I found, even I wasn't sure that the discussion was entirely coherent, but I liked the fact that they're bringing up strategy a little bit, during this match.
Yeah, they try. And it's interesting to be halfway through the second match here that even though Penta's in charge, he's moving a little bit slower. He's a little bit beat up, and, you know, he may have been able to easily defeat Kairi Sane or Doku, but Mayu here, what's her Lucha Underground name?
Yure, yes.
Yure, is giving him a little bit more of a hard time.
Right, right. And then eventually Yure hits a Hurricanrana off the top rope. Vampiro with the comment of, I love anything in black that's dressed to hurt you, giving his state of mind. Uh-huh. Then Yure comes off the top again with a double stomp. It only gets two. Yuri charges Pentagon and hits a spinning DDT, and then comes off the top, but then Dark catches her, holds her, and hits the package pile driver, and then follows with finishing her off with the arm breaker, ending the match again with the ref stoppage.
Yeah. Yeah, great. I think the first match was like, okay, and I thought this was like, oh, this was a good wrestling match.
Right, and this is more 50-50-ish, I would say, in terms of, you know, the back and forth. And you bring up a good point that Pentagon is doing a great job of selling the I've endured a struggle here. You know, I'm still, you know, when I'm on, I'm still on, but I'm definitely, I'm taking a beating already. So
you actually see him like at the end, right before Melissa Santos introduces the third competitor, you see him kind of drop to a knee in the corner. Just a little bit. Okay, just give me a second. Just need to catch my breath.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So, the third match against Hito Kiri, which means assassin in Japanese. And I'm sorry, how do you pronounce her WWE name again?
Well, this is her WWE name and her pre-WWE name. Io Shirai.
Io Shirai. Okay. So she's
one of the newer WWE signees, and they are doing, I feel like they're doing a better job of just not changing people's names. I feel like maybe that's come to an end.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting times.
Yeah. Hey, well, we'll take it. But, and you know, as we'll see here, she's absolutely fantastic. I mean, you know, she stands out from the other three, although they all seem very good. Mm-hmm. And you know, she, you know, there is the introduction, but she doesn't come out at, you know, through the normal channel. She comes from behind, attacks him, and then sends him out of the ring. She does a moonsault from the top turnbuckle to the floor, and then follows with basically an amazing tope through the ropes. And she's just, you know, it's just an onslaught by her. I mean, she grabs a chair, she slams it onto the floor, and then she screams and runs and just slams it on his face. And then another hard chair to the back. I mean, she's just going after him and just really, you know, unloading. It's a really impressive onslaught right away.
Maybe, I think maybe this is my favorite wrestling debut of the last decade. Like, in terms of, I know this isn't like her first match ever, but it's her first match on this show. This is the only time she wrestles on this show.
Right.
This is the first time American audiences get a chance to see her with English commentary, you know? So I think you can call this a debut.
Right.
And it's one of my favorites. I can't really think of a better one in terms of a first impression. And this really is why I was like, I feel like I should show Jason this match. And maybe any sort of lapsed fan or someone who hasn't been around for a while, maybe a little tired of things, like, you know what I think you need? I think you need a little bit of Io Shirai in your life.
Yes, and I'm glad he did. Yeah, and she, you know, she follows up by throwing him into the announce table, slap to the face, and then tosses him into a series of empty chairs on the outside. You know, using a lot of the arena areas, and you know, I feel like sometimes when wrestlers go to the outside and are kind of moving with each other, it feels kind of listless. It feels like just kind of like one guy grabbing the other guy by the head and just moving over to this area. It's like, okay, we'll do something over here. But I feel like they avoid that here. I feel like they do a nice job of, again, using the space of finding different ways. And, you know, and this is really intense and really violent. She lifts up the floor mat. She initially tries a slam. They fight over it a little bit, but she ends up slamming. But I always enjoy that. I always enjoy when, you know, somebody tries to do a slam, or like the Jumping Bomb Angels had a thing where a lot of times, you know, they try to lift the other wrestler up in a butterfly suplex. They wouldn't get it immediately, and then they'd hit him a few times and then do it again and then finally succeed. I always enjoy when, you know, they fight over a little bit and you make something a struggle before they actually hit the move. That's
me too. Really me cool. too. That's yeah. wrestling. That's what wrestling should be. It shouldn't be easy, right?
Right. Yes, exactly. the announcers refer to an incident where Vampiro basically had the same thing happen to him, where he was slammed in that same general area onto the floor and then ended up having to be hospitalized.
This was sort of when Pentagon attacked Vampiro and decided to sort of break off from him. He attacked him in that area. So this is one of the advantages of having a set where you stay in the same place all the time, is when something happens in one section, you can reference back to it.
And I think they showed clips of that initially, you know, when at the beginning of the show where they're showing Pentagon and Vampiro, and Vampiro's giving him that talk. They show clips of, you know, of Pentagon violently attacking him and making him bleed and, you know, and all that. So we get a reference to that. And she keeps kicking him and he starts to ask for more. Vampiro with some extra creepy commentary about how excited he's getting about all this. All this fun stuff. So he's even like breathing in like an excited way.
Right? Like when was the last time you've heard like a color commentator just heavy breathing about violence? Like it adds that, because this is not really a live wrestling show, right? There are people in the crowd, but this is 100% a television show. So they're using every part of it to make the people at home feel a certain way. And in this moment, deeply uncomfortable.
Yes. So Pentagon finally turns the tide when she tries a handspring elbow, but then he chases her, catches her with a kick as she's going off the ropes, which is really cool. And then Pentagon sort of casually kicks her around. This is the same thing that she had done to him before hitting a snap mirror and a harsh kick to the back of the neck. He again does the shushing the crowd and slapping to the chest, and follows with another sharp kick to the face in which she rolls around in agony and pain. Then tosses her to the floor and then sends her into the series of empty chairs as has been done to him. Very nice visual there. Mm-hmm. And then grabs the camera cable, whips her with it, and then chokes her, and then wraps her around the post, and then chokes her. They get a really good shocked reaction from one of the fans there. There's a really good reaction of like, okay, this has become a little bit too much for me type reaction from the fan. Really adds a nice visual to all of this.
Yeah, absolutely. They, wrestling grandmas are my favorite thing, and I believe that was one of them. She just looks like, I can't believe what I'm seeing. Meanwhile, they cut to like some like 28-year-old guy with a neck beard, and he's just like clapping along.
Yep.
You know?
I just want more. Yeah, well, we have our thresholds, you know. So
yeah, you know, it's great. Yeah. It shows both sides. I love it.
Yeah. So Pentagon grabs the chair, he plays to the ground, and then he nails her in what Matt Stryker refers to as the caboose. Mm-hmm. She holds it in pain for a while, then does a running kick to the ribs, and again, Pentagon tosses her into another set of chairs. Pentagon then lifts up the mat again, and then does a Death Valley driver into the mat. And then he slams her face twice into some sort of sign. It looks like a check mark sign. I'm not sure if that's commonly in the arena or if that's something that's special for this. Is there anything to that? Okay.
I don't remember. It could have. It's been a few years since I've sort of seen the show sequentially.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It may have just been a sign a fan had made. I'm not even clear about that. But anyway, he measures her with kicks. He has earlier set up a chair so it was seated. He tries tossing her into this chair, but then she reverses it and does a drop toe hold into the chair. Of course, commonly Raven did that move. In fact, Stryker refers to it as a Dreamer Raven effect. Of course, you know, given that Raven did that as Tommy Dreamer a bunch of times. So, always.
That's good. They should name moves after the two people who did it best the more often.
Yeah. That's nice. That's a good point. So, she then sprints up the stairs and then goes up to the balcony And, you know, she poses up there. The fans are going crazy. And then she jumps off of it onto Pentagon, who's on the floor. I don't know, 25 feet, 30 feet?
Something.
Yeah.
It's pretty high.
It's pretty high, yeah. apparently she's the first female to do this. This has been done by some males during the thing, but certainly a rare instance and quite a... quite a large jump and quite a spectacular move.
Oh my God, is it ever. So let's just talk about this for a second. Yes. I believe there's two men who did it. I know Angelico is one, and I believe Rey Fénix is the other, but I could be wrong about that. But I know Angelico was one. Angelico kind of jumped off that thing four or five times, and it was kind of all he did in Lucha Underground, actually, because he spent so much of it injured. Probably because he was jumping off 30-foot... heights maybe a couple of times like an idiot. It was amazing, and I think this was the best of them all, because it's a brand new person doing it. It's out of nowhere. You don't expect it. You sort of expect stuff like that out of guys like Angelico. He's also in AEW right now. A lot of Lucha Underground guys are in AEW and WWE now. So you just didn't expect it here. She's been a brawler this whole time, right?
Right. Yeah.
So incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she did a few spectacular dives early on, but yeah, this has mostly been a brawl since then. Lots of vicious shots, but not much that spectacular in that way up until here. So they're both out for a little bit, for 10 seconds or more. They do make a cursory mention of, because this, none of these are technically no disqualification matches, but Stryker says, well, with referees just being lenient here, he knows to be lenient here because the owner wants this to play out the way that it's playing out. So
there is an amazing in canon reason for certain things to happen in Lucha Underground, and that is because the owner and promoter and plot device of the show really enjoys violence. The old adage of, hey, why are there garbage cans and kendo sticks under the ring? It's like, well, it's because that guy who runs the show likes violence.
Right.
Fair all enough. The better to make more violence.
Make the subtext into text, I guess. Yes.
Exactly.
Yes. So she wakes up first. She tosses him into the ring. She puts him in a pile driver position, but he counters it, lifts her up into the package pile driver, but is unable to hit it. She then flips him, hits the Canadian Destroyer, and then pins him to what is a huge cheer from the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Who we're not expecting finish. Yeah.
Even though she's the interloper, my God, did she deserve it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's incredible. So Black Lotus comes out with the other two members of the triad, both of them who are holding their arms. And as we've stated, he broke her arm, so this is her revenge. She does not wait for the bell to ring or the introductions. She attacks the ref. She stomps on Pentagon. Then she locks in his arm breaker move and breaks his arm, which is the first time apparently that this has been done to him at all. And then she steps on his back. And then we have El Dragon Azteca come out. And this initially, of course, the story began or had a major point here where Dragon Azteca and Black Lotus were facing off against each other, and then Pentagon Dark game involved. It's clear from the announcing that he does not like either Black Lotus or Pentagon Dark, but the Black Lotus triad all step off of the apron, allow it to be these two men, and then he steps on Pentagon's broken arm and then does the same thing to Pentagon Dark's other arm. So now they're both broken. And then he says in Spanish, "This is my vengeance," and we basically close the show from there.
Mm-hmm. So this is—I mean, I've said the word payback a few times already for people who have been longtime viewers of wrestling and see the patterns. Payback is generally something good guys do to bad guys. And it's done poorly so often. I feel like WWE does Payback poorly. It's sort of John Cena beating up the same guy five shows in a row, and they consider that Payback.
Right.
I feel like this is Payback in wrestling done extremely well. For all intents and purposes, Pentagon Dark is the villain of this story. And this is the first time in the show that El Dragon Azteca shows a little bit of grit, a little bit of badassery. He's kind of a, too good of a good guy.
Right. A little namby-pamby, you know?
A little bit. Right. It's fine. You need at least one of those.
Sure. Everybody needs a patriot, you know?
Right? Exactly.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And this show knew exactly what to do with these characters. I feel like this was very well written, very well produced. What's important about this Payback is that's the end of the story. There isn't five more episodes of as Dragon Azteca humiliating Pentagon. You know, that's it. They move on to something else.
Yeah. Well, yeah, this is cool. This is fun. This is a great little mini, you know, storyline, I guess, which was part of Lucha Underground's efficiency of storytelling. But I am glad that you showed me this, and I want to see more of everybody involved.
So how does one watch Lucha Underground is a very good question right now, because from 2014 to 2017, when the show was on, you could watch it on the El Rey network in the States. You could probably tell me better than I could if you can still watch the show on the El Rey network. I don't know if they have a streaming thing or whatever. You used to be able to see the show on Netflix. I believe Tubi, T-U-B-I, Roku owners probably know that channel.
Okay.
I believe that shows it in the States. I believe you can buy the show just as a TV show on iTunes. I believe those are all the legal ways to see Lucha Underground.
Gotcha. Yes. I see that there is still a show page on the, El Rey network. There's an episode list and there's some video of it. I'm not sure if you can play it, but yeah, there is Tubi. To be or not to be, yes, it is to be. And this will be interesting to see. Maybe I'll check a few of these out and see what I've been trying to do. I've been watching, you just kind of, I created basically a random playlist of matches that are less than 15 minutes, just so I can kind of digest by wrestling. And
I've been seeing that. Lessons.
Yeah, I've got like 800 matches on it now. So,
oh my God.
I just kind of like, what I like to do is I like to, you know, go in and then I hit the shuffle button and then it just plays something random. So that way I don't have to do a whole lot of thinking. I can just, you know, watch it and do whatever. And then if it's longer than 15 minutes, I have like a small watch later playlist that I occasionally will throw some, okay, like more classic type matches that I haven't seen or haven't seen in a long time. So,
yeah.
But yeah, we'll see. There are some individual matches on YouTube from Lucha Underground that I've seen, cause I watched one or two others, previously. So, but yeah, no, this was fun. I definitely going to be searching all of these guys and seeing if I can find, more stuff, but, yeah, very cool. Anything else before we, close it down?
No, I don't think so.
All right. Well, I believe are going to be introducing a new wrestling podcast. Would you like to talk about that at all?
Yeah. I mean, I'm guessing because this will go up pretty soon. I've got a title and I've got a set of ideas and I have a pitch for people. So you have a lot of people who listen to the show who are wrestling fans. And quite a few of them have been on my show before, International Object, or have liked my stuff. So I think you might like this new thing I'm doing, and you know, this is good. So the title is called Why Are We Wrestling Like This? With a question mark, because it's a show about trying to sort of figure out some stuff. In one way, it's for the lapsed fan to, you know, to find some just weird and delightful, awesome stuff. I'm definitely going to be talking about Lucha Underground on this thing with people. And for another, it's like, there's a lot of questions that I want to ask about wrestling, that I want to sort of deep dive with people about. I want it to be an interesting space. So look out for that. That's going to be a new podcast coming from me and, you know, this quarantine, because I have a little bit of extra time on my hands.
Yeah, so excited for that one. I'm sure it'll be great stuff. Always enjoy listening to the stuff that you've done. Enjoy your writing, and you know, and enjoy your friendship.
Thank you, man. You too.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for checking us out. Of course, you know, you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher, wherever you listen to podcasts. And also follow me on Twitter at WrestleSpective, and I'll be, you know, sharing some stuff wrestling that I'm watching and some gifts here and there. So look out for that. So until next time, we'll be back again soon.